Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Weekday Wednesday, Tucson, Arizona's number one online radio podcast about all things medical cannabis. Your host, Belle Starr.
And the Cannabis Kid. Our show features news, interviews, and all the latest information about anything and everything medical cannabis related in Tucson, Arizona,
and the world at large. We'd love to hear from you. Please give us a call live at 646-915-8421. You can like us on Facebook, follow us on all social media, or email thctucson@gmail.com.
We would like to thank Tumbleweeds Health Center and Studio C, along with our many sponsors, for hosting our show every week. With the lowest price certifications in town, you'll find hemp products, accessories, and all things related to medical cannabis education.
Visit Tumbleweeds Health Center at 5315 East Broadway Boulevard or online at tumbleweedshealthcenter.com. And remember,
be smart,
be safe,
and educate.
All right, welcome to Weed Day Wednesday, everybody.
Howdy, howdy.
Howdy, howdy. May 26th, Cannabis Kid. How are you?
Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, that's right. It's coming up. Where's our gunshots? We want to give a shout out to the Blood and Dust Gun Riders.
I see it. Woo-hoo!
In Tombstone, Arizona.
I see it.
We are going to be at Wide Earth Day this weekend. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday. We are just shooting it up, hanging
you
people.
Ladies are super cute.
There's brothels and bars and shoot-ups and hangings and you name it and more. Come on down to Tombstone, folks. Come get shot up down in Tombstone. See some Wild West action.
Don't get hung, folks.
Don't do anything stupid. They can hang you right there. So, Blood and Dust. Woo!
How are you doing, Belle?
I'm fantastic. I'm excited for the weekend.
Good, good, good. She's hanging in there.
She just got slammed by some bubble gum and can't
breathe. Yeah, it hit her in the throat.
It hit her in the face. Yeah.
Someone punched her in the throat.
Yeah, bubble gum. That was a nice bubble gum. Shouldn't punch people in the throat.
But.
We have a very interesting guest on this morning. We've never had this type of a guest on, have we?
We haven't.
Not. No, this is great.
No,
this
is something new.
Type for the cannabis business. And you've heard about life coaching. You know, when you're having challenges in life trying to figure out what it is you want to do and where you want to be and what do you want to be when you grow up, you can go to a life coach. And, you know, the life coach is someone who has a lot of experience just with life, basically, and hopefully is a well-rounded person that might give you some advice that may help you live a more positive life. Well, this gentleman, Mr. Bill, is a cannabis life coach. Does not get any better than that, I don't think.
You know, Belle and I, we've been talking about how there's so many new careers coming into this this whole industry.
Resilience.
And being able to transfer something over from, you know, the normal?
Yeah.
The routine. There we go. The routine.
The daily routine.
Way of America's job is changing.
Yeah.
People haven't had jobs for a really long time. You know, going into a whole different thing, but this industry is allowing people to come on over and
real jobs. There's been a lot of closet jobs for growers, for trimmers, for advertisers, for people in this business who haven't been able to come out of that cannabis closet, and they're going to.
And this is awesome to have been able to bring these skills over into.
Yeah.
For something this new.
Is important.
It is.
This is an
totally
important,
important
skill, and this is an important job and career, and we're glad Mr. Bill came to us.
Yes, thank you so much. It's good to have him.
This is the one thing. Is we need coaching in this. We need cannabis coaching for real. You know, there are a lot of myths out there about how stupid you get or how you can't function or
you're lazy,
you're no good to society. Mm-hmm. And I tell you, this is funny because people come into Tumbleweeds Health Center.
You don't own your own business.
East Broadway Boulevard, Suite 103. And they go, you're the owner? And we go, yeah. And I say, well, and they go, really? And they go, yeah. And they say, well, how do you do with cannabis? And I say, well, this business would not be here if it weren't for cannabis. Because cannabis helps me, I know, with my fibromyalgia and back challenges. I won't even say problems, but they're just challenges, and we work with them. We work with the challenges we have in our body. And it helps me tremendously. I don't have to take the Vicodin or all the pain pills, the anti-inflammatories. If you have fibromyalgia, it's a swollen mess. Your body's just a neurological swollen mess everywhere. It doesn't matter. Cannabis really helps take that swelling down. It takes inflammation down. It increases my circulation, I'm sure. It helps with blood sugar levels. But, you know, cannabis helps me run this business, helps my business partner run this business every single day. We wouldn't have the business if it weren't cannabis. We love it.
I think it's important. It is, you know, business owners like ourselves. We
Steve Jobs. There's
Carl Sagan. I posted a really fun article. There's a whole bunch of celebrities out there.
Oh, Jennifer where's Smith? The video? Yeah, we'll get the video. I posted that last night. So I usually do a Facebook check before I go to bed so I can find out stuff. But my goodness, there's cute puppies on the internet right now. It's like squirrel. You know, dogs are running to the park. You could throw a ball. They see a squirrel. They go the opposite direction. We're on the squirrel mode right now. Squirrel. But here, let's see. I posted a couple things. Oh, here we go. Five celebrities on cannabis. Mm-hmm. On cannabis. Get it? Five celebrities on cannabis. Okay, couldn't help myself. Let's see what this says here. And we're going to just turn it down for a second. Let's see. I don't know why we're getting weird piano playing. Jennifer Aniston says, I enjoy smoking cannabis and see no harm in it. Morgan Freeman says, legalize it across the board. Joseph Gordon-Levitt says, marijuana is overly demonized in our culture. And Arnold Schwarzenegger says, this is not a drug. It's a leaf. Smoke it. Bryan Cranston says, it's ridiculous that marijuana is illegal. Booyah! And there you have it. I don't know why the sound didn't come through.
No, it's good, Belstar.
Not bad on Arnold, huh?
You're awesome.
It's a tumor. It's not a tumor.
I want you to do it again. You're really good. I was like, that was way better than anyone bringing it in.
All right, now I just went Irish. So. That was wrong. All right, anyway, I don't know why the little video thing didn't play, but we ad-libbed, and we got it in. And,
it was awesome.
First person on there is a girl.
I know. Jennifer Aniston is out there speaking her mind. You know, another one, a great one would be Sarandon. Yep. There's a lot more celebrities that are out there that are speaking up and saying, you know, I use it every day and I'm functionally working and creative.
Out and proud candidate.
And I think that's one of the things is it opens up a different side of you to be more creative.
And more open.
To be more open.
More thoughtful.
Mm-hmm.
More pensive.
Definitely.
Get those little wheels turning.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I'd say that. Well, why don't we turn on this wheel and say
good.
Hi to Bill and see what he has to say about cannabis.
Right on.
Cooking.
Let's make.
All right.
Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Mr. Bill.
Good morning, folks. How are you?
Good.
Well, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine. I question the wisdom of doing a cannabis show at 8 o'clock in the morning, but I'm with you.
Yeah, we question that every Wednesday morning, too. Yeah, you need some bubble gum, I see.
Yeah.
Thank you for coming on our show.
No, I'm pleased to be here. I anything I can do to help advocate for what we're trying to accomplish, I think is a good thing for everybody across the board. I also bring a pretty unique perspective to this whole discussion, and I like what was said earlier about opening up new fields and new opportunities, new innovation, new ideas, and I think that's an emerging market, which, you know, is one of the reasons that I've decided to shift my focus away from educating law enforcement to educating people about medical cannabis.
Wow. So tell us about your law enforcement career. Well, tell us about you. Tell us how you came to see us.
I think my story is pretty relevant because there's a lot of people out there that, you know, have gone through similar things to what I've gone through. I was a career cop. I started in Tucson, Arizona in 1978 and lost a partner in a shootout and at over 6 ounces of cocaine and moved up to the Pacific Northwest and started my law enforcement career over and worked my way from the streets, commanded one of the largest special investigations division in the Pacific Northwest, used to chase you guys around all over the place, worked my way up to assistant chief of police until a major back surgery ended my career and retired medically. And then my story becomes although that piece of my story is very unique, the piece that is not unique starts right now. It you know, that when I retired medically was when they put me on opiates. You know, I had used them off and on for about 10 years before then, and I'm a survivor of severe post-traumatic stress, as you could well imagine.
Yeah.
and so I started a regiment of opiates, believing, you know, that the pharmaceutical model was the way to go. And to make the long story a little bit longer, after 10 years of being out teaching and consulting and writing a book on leadership based on the West Point leadership model, I'm sitting on my couch weighing over 400 pounds with A1C level at 13.7, eating 500 milligrams of morphine every day, and all the other drugs, 20 milligrams of Ambien to put me to sleep at night, and on and on and on and on and on. And my sons came down from Washington State and said, you know, kind of did a little intervention and said, "Hey, Dad, you're going to die. And, you know, you got to change. You got to find an alternative to this." And I said, "You know, boys, what's the alternative?" And they said, "Medical cannabis." Well, you're talking to a career cop.
Yeah.
Who, when I hired on, in my sheriff's office, you know, if you smoked more than three times, you know, experimentation, you know, there was a disqualifying, you know, requirement. And so it wasn't a part of our culture. It was always a subculture. I'm also a boomer. So, you know, the boomer generation was the one that came through the, you know, 60s and 70s and, you know, kind of rode the tails of that. So it wasn't, I didn't really see it as an option. But the key to what they said to me was that my wife is an expert in essential oils. And so I started studying just on the basis of what they talked about in terms of, you know, everybody thinks about, you know, the one oil, THC, you know, the one cannabinoid that is, you know, psychoactive. And, you know, that's the one that gets all the sexy in the press and everything. But they started telling me about all the other oils in there and all the other, you know, valuable cannabinoids that existed. So what I did is I started a 3-month, just all I did was research, just researched everything I could find. And I looked at it through several different portals because I had the cultural stigmas to overcome. I'm a political conservative. I belong to a very conservative religion, and, you know, my friends, my circles, very conservative. And so it was a great challenge for me, not just cultural, but also, you know, in terms of the science and the legal and all that. Bottom line is this. I boiled all of the issues away. One by one, all the, like you talked about, all the stigmas began to fall away, you know, as I researched. And I went back and looked at what Anslinger did back in the 30s and, you know, the propaganda that was foisted up against, you know, marijuana, the racist, you know, weed that makes you go crazy and, you know, rape people and things like that. And, you know, one by one, those social stigmas fell away. And I got down to two bottom line facts. Number one is that my endocannabinoid system, which I didn't know existed, needed to be replenished. And I'd been killing it off with pharmacological drugs for the last 20 years of my life. And secondly, is that, you know, kill, depending upon what study you watch, is that 50 to 55 people a day are dying because of opiate overdoses in this country. And, you know, somehow we think that's an acceptable level of loss for pharmaceutical delivery.
Right.
And I just refuse to accept that. So I decided to give it a shot. I went in, I talked to my doctor about it. He belonged to a medical group that, you know, they personally were not advocating for medical cannabis. And so their instructions were that the client had to ask, the patient had to ask.
Oh.
And so every time I would go in for the last few times to get my morphine renewed, you know, all my pills renewed, he'd ask, "Is there anything else?" Well, I didn't know he was hinting
wow.
to me, you know, but he couldn't say the magic words. And so finally I went in and I said, "Yeah, I want to try this." And he goes, "Thank you. I've been dying for you to ask me about medical
wow.
cannabis." He says, "I think that's a great opportunity for you." So I thought, well, I'll try just tinctures and oils. You know, I could never see myself smoking marijuana. You know, I couldn't envision that. And my sons had talked to me about vaporization. And so I looked into that also, and I decided to go try. So I finally got my card. and I went in, and I walked in and put my card on the table and said, give me the best thing you got. Give me the most powerful thing. I want to test this. I want to see if this really does alleviate pain, and it really does. And so the guy gives me something called Durban Poison. And,
yeah.
And so I rushed home and stuffed some in my vaporizer and, you know, fired that baby up and pulled 3, 4, 5, 6 times. Didn't think I was getting anything. Went out, got in the car. My wife and I were going to have dinner, and got about 3 miles away from the house, and I forgot how to speak English. So I said, you know, this is some serious medicine. I got to get my hands around this. I got to figure out what to do and how to do this. So what I figured out was at least in Arizona, I don't know what the other states are, and you guys are obviously expert in this more than I am, but in Arizona, there's a gap in the delivery system. I mean, we educate the dispensaries that care about education, the certification centers that care about education, they do a pretty good job, but there's an awful lot of people out there that are not concerned about teaching people. They're just interested in bottom line profit, you know, kind of slinging the marijuana around, you know, kind of thing. And what I saw was the gap between when I leave the store, the dispensary, how does a person like me understand dosing levels? How do I understand how to do this? It was all trial and error for me, and it literally took me about 2 years to figure it all out. Now, let me tell you what's at the end of that 2.5. I've now had my card for 2.5 years, and in that 2.5 years, I've taken my I've lost almost 100 pounds.
Wow.
My A1C level is from 13.7 to now I'm down to 5.4. I am now, April 15th was the last day I touched morphine. I'm completely off. I'm completely off opiates. I'm completely off my sleep medications, everything.
Yeah,
no kidding. I tell you, that demon was the toughest one to beat right there, coming off that morphine. So what I realized in this delivery system was there's a lot of people like me that are out there. You know, the millennials and the Gen Xers, you know, they've got a pretty good handle on this, on how to use, you know, cannabis products. And, you know, they're pretty well off. And if they don't, they have a social network, a peer group that can help them do it. But when you get up into the boomers and the traditionalists, the older generation, the ones that are just ahead of us, you know, we don't know anything about this. I mean, I got a call last night from a 71-year-old lady who has rheumatoid arthritis and a fibromyalgia that she went in to a dispensary and they gave her a candy bar. And she went home and tried the candy bar, not knowing how to dose or anything. And, you know, she called the dispensary and said, hey, I need somebody to help me. And, of course, they referred her over to me, and I talked to her on the phone. So I got to go, I got to go help this delivery gap. That's what I'm focused on. So what I do is I actually go into people's homes. I help them. I find out what their symptoms are. I find out what they're using the cannabis for. And then I help them do the research. I help them find the strains. I help them with the process. Once they get their card, then I show them how to use properly, how to dose properly, how to experience, how to control the medicine, how to respect the medicine, but how to control the medicine. And I've found people that have just the stories have just absolutely been overwhelming. I found people that have had stage 4 cancer that they went into a place that, you know, really didn't care about their symptomology, and they just give them what they, you know, the best price point stuff they had, and it chased them away from medical cannabis. They were scared to death of it. And so I'd go in and help educate them and teach them. And a story that I like to tell, one of the first clients I had was a stage 4 cancer, lung cancer, gentleman that could barely get from his couch over to the dining room table. And he had gone into one of the dispensaries that doesn't care about education and said, hey, I need something strong to kill my pain. And they gave him a high energy sativa, and it scared him away. And so I went in, I found the medicine that he needed, got him set up, taught him how to vaporize. And that man lived a year and a half with a higher quality of life when he took his family on a vacation, lived for another year. And so that's where I'm getting my rewards, you know, now. That's the seeing people being able to deal with pain, being able to, you know, shrug off the morphine damage and, you know, the pharmaceutical model that is out there is just killing people. And I'm sure you guys see that all the time.
Oh, yeah. All the time.
Go ahead.
No, I wanted to ask how you felt when you were taking all the opiates and stuff. You felt pretty justified in taking all those, even though you were gaining weight and not feeling well and not feeling like yourself. But you mentally, the stigma we have. How did you get over that stigma? 38 years as an assistant police chief. Come on, that's hard to turn your head around.
Right.
You know?
Hey, you're not kidding. My opinion was that all you medical marijuana people were a shill for the legalization people. That was my opinion, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're trying to get your foot in the legalization door and all this stuff about medical application. Well, it was all a bunch of hogwash. And, you know, that was my opinion. And that's kind of the prevailing opinion inside law enforcement right now. You know, most cops generally think that the whole medical marijuana thing is a scam for legalization. And, you know, and then once that genie's out of the bottle, our society's all going to hell. And quite frankly, in my 38 years as a cop, I didn't arrest too many domestic violence people that were, you know, strung out on marijuana. I didn't arrest too many people that were shooting at people because of marijuana. You know, marijuana was not the source of societal decay. It's looked at completely wrong. And so you're right. It took a huge leap for me, because as long as the doctor, you know, signed that prescription, that was socially acceptable, culturally acceptable, and, you know, that was the way I was supposed to go. And you know, here I am, keep going in, weight keeps going up, dosages keep going up. You know, at what point does the medical model have a responsibility to say, wait a second, opiate use is not designed for 20 years of use. It's designed for short term. And we've seen the DEA come out on that recently and say, you know, give direct to the doctor saying, hey, this is for short-term use. But what we found out is there are so many people out there that are just wrapped up in that pharmaceutical model that, you know, more and more, you know, bigger and bigger is better and better. And it just isn't. It's killing people. And we're finding it all over the place. And it crosses all demographics, and it crosses all age groups, too. It is a common problem in society. And medical cannabis is the most logical way out of this thing. I mean, when I was suffering, when I finally had got to the point where I was, I'm not taking any more morphine. I've replaced all my pain management stuff with medical cannabis. I said, the symptomology is killing me. I mean, the dry heaves, the vomiting, everything. And what I did is I used my own science. I went in, I studied the terpene level, I went to the molecular level, I found the strain that was best for my biology, was LSD. I went out, I got the LSD, it helped me with my withdrawal symptoms, and I was able to make it through the experience. And so, you know, if a simple guy like me, you know, who's so prone to addiction, can do it, you know, everybody can do it. It's just, we have to overcome a lot of those social stigmas and the cultural stigmas.
And what was it that you researched that helped you overcome that? Because that's a lot of, like you're saying, the folks even older than the baby boomers, they're the ones that have the most mental challenge. They come in and they're like, I can't even believe I'm in here. Can you believe I'm in here? Like, we've known them their whole lives. Like, for 90 years, we can't believe they just walked in the door. And we're like, hell, my God, you're in here.
I'll tell you, my wife's mother died of pancreatic cancer and Alzheimer's. And when I first started doing my research, I noticed, you know, significant linkages to improving the quality of life for people with severe, you know, disease issues. And I began to reflect, and as we began to talk about it, I began to reflect about how we could have made her life better and about how we could have maybe staved off, you know, some of the symptoms that, you know, took her away from us. And that kind of really motivated me to say, well, wait a second, there's more to this than just symptom relief. There's a whole wellness aspect to it. Like I said, my post-traumatic stress issue. Here's another good story. And this is what I'm finding, because now my ears are up and I'm watching. I was in a store the other day printing out a business plan. I'll talk to you a little bit about that later if you want. But so I'm printing, and I see a young man come, and he's got his dark glasses on. He's got the sleeve tattoos. They're all military tats. And he's got a service dog with him. And he's walking very carefully, and he's looking around corners. Well, clearly I got a PTSD vet, right? So he comes inside the print shop, and he looks around, make sure he peeks in first before he comes in. A classic PTSD, case. So he comes in and walks around before he gets in line. He's surveying the threats. He's walking around being careful. He finally comes over and gets in line. Well, somebody dropped something or something fell over, and this guy triggered. The loud noise triggered this kid. And boom, he had to go outside. So I gave my flash drive to my wife. I said, here, you take the printing. I got to go help this kid. So I went out. He was sitting on a planter, and I went up and, a few feet away from him, showed him I was no threat. I went up and talked to him. And I said, are you an Iraqi vet? He said, yeah. He said, I told him who I was and what I do. And I said, what are they giving you over there at the VA for post-traumatic stress? He says, oh, man, they're just feeding me opiates, just opiates, opiates, opiates. And I told him, I said, here. I gave him my card. I said, told him what I do. The kid started crying. He just, he just needed somebody to reach out and, get a hold of him and say, we need some help. So the kid, he takes about 50 of my cards. He says, all of my brothers in my support group are all strung out on opiates. They're treating these vets with opiates for post-traumatic stress disorder, and it's killing them. Vets are killing themselves at a higher rate than any time in history. We're just not taking care of those guys. And medical cannabis is such a relief. I was so glad to see the VA has finally approved doctors' recommendations for medical cannabis, because we got to get these kids off opiates. It's going to kill them. It's just going to kill them all.
It surely is.
That is awesome.
And how is it that you're reaching out to people other than having just a personal experience in a print shop? How are you finding folks? And what are you saying to them?
Well, I've just been a one-man army just out here marching around. I go to dispensaries. I came into Double Weeds out on 5351 East Broadway, whatever the address is. And there's a plug. I go to the certification centers. But what I've been doing is I've been looking for pinch points. Where am I going to get the most exposure to people who need my services? And the certification centers is really the most logical place. I've gone around to all the dispensaries. I do presentations. Like, for instance, there's a dispensary just north of Tucson here that every first Monday of the month, they've advertised to all their senior communities. They have all these developed senior communities around their area. And so they've advertised in all the senior community newspapers, and every first Monday of the month, they have a senior day where they come in. We do education. I do a presentation. I teach them. I talk to them about their symptomology, and they get exposure to what we do to kind of take the pressure off, to relieve the stress of, oh my gosh, what is this? And how do I do this? And, it's like when I talked to my mom about it, who, obviously is older, and she said, well, isn't there just a pill I can take? But you see, that's the mentality. That's the mentality of my generation and the generation in front of us. Just give me a pill. Just give me a pill. And, we got to fight our way through this thing. They have such a hold on Western medicine that it's just killing people.
Yeah. So are we seeing more people? I mean, you, like this gentleman from Iraq, I mean, we were out the other day, and we were actually at the 420 event, and there was a lot of guys that came up that were experiencing these same same traumas. The one kid had explained that the cops had shined a light on him, and he was in a horrible experience with some police officers, and it had just set him into a panic every time there was any law enforcement near.
Yeah.
And
triggered him.
Triggered. And so, oh man, I just am, I'm loving what you are being able to go out and do, and being able to handle these situations, because some of them are really traumatic, and some people would even almost take it to where they wouldn't even know how to handle a person in this kind of state. How is it that, I mean, like the gentleman from Iraq, how was that for him? I mean, even just, was he having flashbacks and just already had set himself there?
Yeah, the post-traumatic stress is a very, very difficult thing to live with. For instance, I find things now that are triggering me that I didn't even know were the sources of my distress. For instance, loud TVs. I didn't know why loud TVs always bothered me. Well, I took a double homicide where a family member killed his parents, and then he drove over to his in-laws and killed his in-laws, and then he drove back to his house, killed his infant in the crib, killed his wife, and then as our officers arrived at the front door, he killed himself. Now,
wow.
Imagine your brain dealing with that, you know, and having to process that crime scene and pick up those guys and, you know, do all that.
Right.
Well, the reason that it was sensitive was because the TV was on full. The guy had turned the TV up to cover the sound of the gunshot. And so every time now I hear a loud TV, guess where I go? I go right back to that, that scene, right? The first shooting I was in was by a dumpster in the back of a Sambo's restaurant. That tells you how long it was. It was actually a Sambo's restaurant. And it was a dumpster. Every time I get that now, I'm right back. All of those people get released. Your brain keep a visual image. It also captures the chemical picture that exists in your body at the time. And we know what that is. That's, you know, epinephrine and glucocorticoids and all those things that are pumping through the system that kill you if they're not removed from the system. They actually poison you from the inside out. So here's all these vets that have these traumatic issues that a loud noise will cause them to release all these chemicals, and those chemicals is what's killing them. And so what they're doing is trying to suppress the startle alerts by giving them opiates. And it's absolutely the wrong thing, because opiates, you know, change your brain chemistry. And what they don't need is change brain chemistry. What they need is logical thought. They need a reduction of symptoms so they can think their way through it. I knew exactly what this kid was, because I used to go in buildings just like that. And I still have trouble today. My wife and I were sitting out on our patio the other evening and vaporizing and just relaxing, and the kids next door were having a party, and there was one little girl in the party that would scream. You know how little girls do, they, you know, teenage girls, you know, she's probably 14, 15 years old, but she would scream at this high pitch, and every time she would do it, I would just about come out of my seat. And my wife noticed it and said, "What's going on? What's happening?" Well, I couldn't figure it out. Well, I worked it through my process, and I figured out that same scream was a scream of a young girl that had just watched her dad blow his head off with a shotgun, that I took a call. And that scream is etched into my memory that also contains emotional component. So every time I hear that scream, I'm right
back there.
So let me ask you
Iraq
this.
Vet. Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
Sorry to interrupt, but this has always been my question about PTSD and cannabis use. So, does cannabis use minimize the reaction? You said it helps you, you know, have a less reactionary thought process versus a calmer thought process. But how physiologically does it help you forget that memory so that you don't even have to have those triggers? I mean, what is it doing to help or stop or inhibit or slow down PTSD? How does it work?
Okay, this is one of the misconceptions that we really have to get out there, and that's one of the reasons that I like working with Tumbleweed Certification Center on East Broadway, is that is because we have to educate people. See, the PTSD, medical cannabis cannot be the only solution to removing the PTSD issues, the symptoms of PTSD. In other words, what they've been using for pharmacological support, you know, is opiates and, you know, sedatives and anti-anxiety and anti-spasmodic type stuff. And that really doesn't do anything because it gums up those neural receptors. So what I tell these guys that have these the PTSD is they've got to get in a productive therapy like EMDR therapy.
Right.
That's one of the things that I've done, and that's one of the reasons that I've been able to recover so well from my career, is that getting off the morphine and moving to medical cannabis has allowed me to now, I can feel emotions again, I can think, I'm sensitive to other people's feelings, which before I was dead from the heart up. And what it does is it allows me now to go through that EMDR therapy. So when I see these guys, these vets, that are just sitting there going through talk therapy doesn't remove that attaching emotional component to it. And they've got to go through an EMDR type therapy that actually processes out those emotional releases, those emotional triggers. I still have the memory. I still have them. I still have a memory of a six-year-old boy that came downstairs to get a drink of water, and his mom's boyfriend, who was on a cocaine paranoia, stuck a shotgun out his bedroom door and shot the kid in the chest. And I was the first officer there and picked the kid up. Now, see, I can tell you that story today because I've processed it through EMDR therapy, and it's removed the emotional component. I still have the memory, but it doesn't trigger the emotionally debilitating chemical release. And what medical cannabis has done is it has allowed me to be able to relax, to allow those neural networks to start operating again, and I found relief. I can talk about these things without just becoming an absolute ball of, you know, emotions and, you know, the pain associated with, you know, how do you tell normal people? In fact, my wife is one of the reasons I'm able to go through EMDR therapy now is because my wife's in there with me. Well, for 30 some years, I came home and she'd say, "How was work today?" "Oh, fine, no problem. Because they taught us, don't take your job home.
Right.
And so I just kept stuffing. And then you add morphine on top of that, and boom, you got a major life crisis waiting for you down the road. And that came true for me, too. So it is in conjunction. And this is my message to all of my PTSD sufferers, is that you just cannot rely on medical cannabis to be the miracle cure. You know, that is going to solve all your problems. Whether you're talking about neuropathy or Parkinsonian tremors or prostate cancer, whatever it is, I don't care what you're talking about, it cannot be the only treatment. You've got to use other things. You've got to get that whole wellness approach to this thing. I've really turned my own mind around on this. I was, you know, because of who I was, it was, well, the doctor said this, and this is what I'm going to do, and, you know, to heck with all the other information. And it took me a long time to shrug off that mentality.
Yeah, I can imagine. Well, we're glad it didn't take another 38 years, you know.
Right.
Because that's a long.
Yeah, me too. Because I don't think I have another 38.
Oh, we do now. Cannabis will keep you around for a while. We hope so.
Yeah. Well, I'm really excited. We're starting. Actually, this thing is really starting to grow so much. I'm going to start looking for help pretty soon because there are so many people out there that just need. You know, they need a little guidance. They need a little help. I got a call a couple weeks ago from a guy that was, he knew he had Parkinson's, but the medicine, his regular medicine was keeping his symptoms down. But recently they have really started to develop. And so I went in, did my research, you know, found what was going to be good for him. He went in, got his card, obviously, qualifying condition. And we went over, and I really regret not filming this, but when we sat down, he got his card, and we went over, and I took over the strains of very high CBD, very low THC, because I didn't want to exacerbate the nerve firings. And so we went over, we sat down. He took four puffs of a low THC, high CBD strain, and literally the transformation was unbelievable. He went from like prehensile tremoring on both of his arms with eye rolling and head rolling to literally sitting there straight. And he actually said, you know, I don't really feel any different. And his wife and my wife and I just looked at each other like, oh my heavens, look at the difference. It was immediate symptom relief. And this guy's been on medication for, well, ever since diagnosed, and he couldn't get any relief from it. And four puffs on the right strain of medical cannabis, and the guy was as calm as you and I, just sitting there, just relaxed and enjoying himself. And I got to tell you, that's where I find my rewards now, is watching that happen.
Yeah,
for sure.
And it can be that quick, too. It can be instantaneous for people.
It can, especially when we get people cleaned out. We build all of our treatment platforms on CBD, a CBD platform, depending upon the concentration levels, the tolerances of the patient. But everything we build, the treatment plans we build, is on, you know, replenishing that CBD, getting those receptor sites cleaned out, you know, letting that endocannabinoid system rebuild your immune system. And people are finding relief. They're finding that same comfort that took me so long to figure out. So I this has been one of the most rewarding things I've done. It's come at a price. I don't have many cop friends anymore, but that's okay. Because I'm doing good. You know, I'm helping people.
Well, that's an interesting thing to say. So literally people have, I want to say, unfriended you almost.
Yeah.
You know, but they've let you go.
They look at me. Yeah, they look at me different. You know. They. You know. It's. I'm the radical. You know. It's. The people that are out in front of this thing, you know, will someday the people will look back and say, yeah, those were the radicals. Those were the people that challenged the norms and challenged the stigmas and I think history will look very good at us, especially if we continue to. I mean, Arizona is, I think, a perfect state to talk about this in, because if you look at most of the models, you're talking about 4 to 5% of the population, you know, will use cannabis products. Well, right now, Arizona is, I think, less than 1% or right around 1%. So Arizona is going to go through a 4 to 5-fold increase in the coming years. And this is the thing that's really exciting to me. I kind of wanted to talk just a little bit about it, but, you know, there's all of these subcultures, the PTSD vets, the retired cops and firefighters and first responders, the people with chronic, you know, pain that have undergone significant trauma in society, where do all these subcultures emerge to? Where do they go? Where do they network with other people? Where do they find other people like me who have, you know, are severely traumatized? So along the way, one of my presentations I did with Kathy Inman up at AZ Mom Force, a very, very big advocate in the Phoenix area, but we did a presentation together. And, in fact, she's talked to Sheriff Joe Arpaio's wife about medical cannabis. He's a big supporter. And so we got to talking, and the next thing I know, she got a recommendation. Oh, I'm sorry. She got a contact of a group in Phoenix that is putting in a connoisseur cannabis club down by the baseball field in downtown Phoenix. And what it's going to be is a membership-only club. They've tried a couple of cannabis clubs, but, those were garages where a bunch of guys hung around an Xbox, you know, kind of thing. And this is a high-end modeled after some of the Denver, you know, clubs that have been started up there. And what it is it's a delivery center. It's a service delivery center where people can come and network, and there's going to be fine dining, no alcohol whatsoever, no money, no cannabis sold on site. But you can bring your own cannabis to the place, and you can network, and we're going to educate people. These right now they're in the fundraising, but there is one scheduled to open in Tucson, about three in the Phoenix area, and then they're looking at Nevada and up in Washington also. So these centers are going to be where all these subcultures can come emerge, where we can put the experts in front of people, where we, you know, can bring in people like Sanjay Gupta and have, you know, community support and awareness start, you know, educating people about this. Because if we're really going to move the needle on this issue and talk about people's health and wellness, then what we've got to do is we've got to provide a place where they can be educated. And like you said earlier, in your motto is about educate. And that's the focus for me. We've got to educate a bunch of people that have been brought up under the same medical model that I have, which is if the doctor said to do it, then do it. Don't question it. Just do it the way the doctor said to do it. And we're finding out that that's not really the best way to go sometimes. You know, I don't want to condemn all medical practitioners, but of course, but you know, that's a pretty broad brush, but the model is what I'm after, which is more, bigger dose. That's the wrong way to go. It's killing people, and we got to stop it. We got to stop this thing.
We do, and it really comes down to a basic free choice, you know, free rights to choose what you want to heal your body with. Like you said, you're not downing on you know, other medicines and modalities, and opioids are supposed to be used very short term for a couple weeks just to get you back on the track, get your body relaxed enough to do its own healing. And doctors now, like, I was so appalled that your doctor hinted and watched you gain weight and watched you get more and more depressed and more out of life and hinted. Well, why the bleep didn't he just bleeping say anything? Like, come on.
You see how much education we've got to do? See, there's another aspect. I've got to go in and start educating police departments. I got to go talk to these guys. I got to go talk to them about when you pull over a car now and you smell, you know, marijuana, don't immediately think arrest. You know, you got to think patient first. You know, you got to individualize your policing. And there's a whole new generation out there that is working hard to get well. And, you know, law enforcement cannot be the impediment to healthy people in our society. We have to be there to facilitate people making the right choices. I'm a big states' rights guy. I mean, I'm a Jeffersonian to the core. I believe the role of the federal government is to protect the rights of the states. And if you want to live in a state that allows you to use medical cannabis or legal cannabis, depending upon your beliefs, then that should be protected by the federal government. And that's why I'm pleased to live in Arizona. So
it should be protected just as much as your right to use drink water or coffee or alcohol or Vicodin if you need it, you want it.
Absolutely.
It's your choice.
This is another issue that I love to talk about, is that when we talk about the subcultures of cannabis, the people that use cannabis, when we talk about these people emerging from their subcultures, you know, we got to make a big tent, because this thing crosses all spectrums of society. It's got conservative cops. It's got, you know, liberal activists. It's, you know, it doesn't, our political ideology has nothing to do with the fact that medical cannabis is one of the most effective methods out there to fight off the symptoms that are plaguing us today. And I really want to focus on that. I really want people's attention when we start talking about those issues. So I'm all about education, and that's why I work with the dispensaries that are focused on education. I work with certification centers that are focused on education, and then in between, I'm out there helping, you know, people, just normal people that are trying to work their way through a very, very difficult life situations, and they just need a little bit of help. They need a little bit of guidance. And once the shackles get taken off this and we can start, you know, opening up and start letting, you know, the air into the system and start educating people and do things, it's going to change society. I'm a firm believer in that.
It is. It absolutely already is. What is the most common question these seniors are asking you every month, every week that you speak with people? What's their biggest fear? What's their most common question? And what do you tell people about getting high? What does that mean?
Well, oh, that's a great question. The seniors are scared to death of the THC. The one cannabinoid, the one, you know, the one sexy little, you know, the, and so that's the one that's scared. They think that somehow, you know, they're going to transform, they're going to morph right in front of me into Cheech and Chong, you know, kind of thing. and they're kind of scared of the psychoactivity aspect. You know, now remember, these are people that will drink two martinis after work every day, right? But they're scared of the psychoactivity. Yeah, they're scared of a little psychoactivity from medical cannabis. And that is just a huge fear. Now, you know, the older people that I deal with, you know, they want the relief, but they're scared to death of the psychoactivity. And that's why, you know, somebody being with them and talking to them, especially when they do their medible experience, okay? Oh. It's like that little lady that I told you about, the 71-year-old lady. When they gave her a candy bar, she went home, and guess what she did? She ate a piece of the candy bar. She had no idea about dosing. She didn't know what level to take. She didn't know how much. And so she called me. She was kind of in a panic. She had taken too much of her candy bar. And my philosophy is low and slow, low and slow. You know, get used to the medicine. Understand it. Learn how to control it, how to move around. So the older people are really frightened about the THC, and, you know, they always hear, oh, there's dizziness. Oh, I'm not real good in my stability anyway. There's dizziness. And when I talk to them about strains like Charlotte's Web or Harlequin or Canatonic that, you know, have, they're breeding now for low THC levels and high CBD levels, you know, and those strains, we are on the cutting edge of what's going to happen with, you know, terpene development in terms of hybrid crossing and crossbreeding. There's going to be strains we're going to be able to put together some very specific treatment plans based on strain compositions. One guy that I got he wants to do the same thing I'm doing, he wants to come in and partner with me, is he wants to develop a database of terpene compounds and strains that we would be able to enter a client's symptomology into a program that would then kick out the critical terpenes and the strains that have that prevalence. And so there's so much that's out there in front of us. We're only limited now by our ideas and our innovation and our compassion. Let's not forget compassion, too. We've got to be compassionate. These people are out there. They're scared. They're dying. You know, they don't, the light at the end of the tunnel for them is a train. It's not the other end of the tunnel. And we need people out there to help these people, to help them out from underneath what they're living with. So that's where I find my great rewards now.
Yeah. It is a great reward when you see the relief that people get. It's funny. It's interesting. People come back to get certified for the second year, and I look at them and I say, wow, I can't wait to take your picture this year because you look so much better. They do. They look healthier.
Yeah,
they look younger. So, they've got the color back in their face. Smiling.
Yes, I have my picture from my first certification card, and that guy in that picture was standing there, you know, over 400 pounds with 500 milligrams of morphine in him, and I don't even recognize the guy.
Yeah.
I don't even, you know, he's a different guy. And my wife and I call him Morphine Bill, you know. So there's a lot of Morphine Bills out there, you know, that are just looking for help and looking for a little guidance. And if we approach this, I wish the industry could collectively get together and say, look, this thing has to be built on the needs of the patient. That has to be the primary motivation in everything that we do. The needs of the patient, not the profit margins, because then we're just we're no better than the big pharmaceuticals. If all we're worried about is profit margins and pumping out, you know, I got to tell you, one of the reasons I like working with Tumbleweeds on East Broadway in Tucson is that while I was in there, I noticed that your doctor would not give approval to somebody because they had not met a threshold. And I got to tell you how rewarding that is. That really tells me that you're on the job, you're doing what you're doing, you're not just a certification mill, that you actually care about this thing. And there are some people that frankly don't need it, and they shouldn't be using it. Like I said, when I talked about Big Tent people, we need to allow all different ideologies and perspectives in to emerge. Like, for instance, I am not a legalization guy. I believe in broad expansion of qualifying conditions. In other words, if your doctor says, oh, you're under stress, I think you should use medical cannabis, that's good enough. But I think it is a powerful drug. And guys like me need a place to go that I can find, you know, support, you know, and network with people like you that, you know, understand the industry from your perspective. And right now, everybody's kind of scared. They don't, you know, they want to crawl out from underneath the rock that society's put them under, and, you know, they don't know where to go, and they don't know who to talk to. And what we've got to do is we've got to educate and build those support networks in our society and in our communities. I mean, we got to contribute to the overall health of our societies. If this is going to be a demonstrated improvement in our sociology, then we have to step out. We just can't sit, you know, behind the TV or the Xbox and, you know, medicate. We've got to get out. We've got to advocate. We've got to talk to people. We've got to educate people, and you know, get people like me or yourself. Get groups together. Let's go talk to people. Let's open the dialogue, and those barriers will come down. If we just start opening the dialogue, those barriers will fall.
Yeah, absolutely. Communication is key. Are you going to vote either way for either initiative that's around?
I am an absolute voter. I take my voting rights very, very seriously. You're not going to ask me which direction I voted, do you?
Well, we think we know. No, I mean for the two initiatives coming up for this election, MPP and AZFMR. Excellent.
Yeah,
well,
I tell you what, we've got to open up the society. This thing is ridiculous. When I think about, as a commander of Special Investigations Division, when I think about all the hundreds of thousands of dollars I spent on taking down grow operations, what an absolute waste of the taxpayers' money. I tell you what, I can't believe that I actually, you know, did what I did. I mean, you know, I was doing my job, but in terms of retrospect, what a waste. What a waste of their lives. What a waste of resources. Of course, you know, we could spend I'd love to come back on and love to talk to you about asset forfeiture laws and about how the war on drugs literally destroyed the police community relationship. I'd love to come on and talk about that a little bit, because I think that's the root of it. You go back to 73, Nixon's war on drugs, that's where the police and the community began to separate, right there. And because now it went from the blue line that defended their freedoms to now predator prey. You know, I'm going to arrest you because I'm going to seize your car. I'm going to seize your house. I'm going to seize your bank account. You know, all because you have a few plants in your garage or your closet. Well, that's ridiculous. And we got to rethink our whole strategy on the war on drugs. You know, so I'm a big advocate for a complete overhaul of the approach to our drug use and how we deal with it in society.
Absolutely. Well, Bill, thank you so much for coming on and sharing your story with us.
It's been an awesome morning.
Yeah, it has really been very educational. Yeah, and we're really excited that you've come in to say hello, and we look forward to working with you and helping you help us and help us help you educate everybody, as many people as we can. It's the most important thing. Everybody should be allowed to make their own choice, but they should make an educated choice, and that's hopefully what people are doing, like you did. Just get out there and research, folks. Do your own research.
Do
Don't
your
just
research.
Turn on the tube and let them tell you what to do, because you don't even know yet. So thank you for being here.
Well,
really
I thank you for the opportunity to you know, speak out. And I'm gaining my voice. I'm learning how to, you know, to like you say, come out, you know, because
I was hidden.
And now I got to be out there. I have a social responsibility to be out there talking about this. And so your program, others like this, helped me get the word out and help others to get the word out. And we just, like you say, educate. So I really appreciate it. And if anybody wants to contact me, I hope that you would, I don't know if you could give out email addresses or
information.
Card.
Tell us
I mean,
everything.
Yeah. Well, anybody can get a hold of me at AZMMJ Coach, like Arizona Marijuana Medical Marijuana Coach, at gmail.com. And, you know, I answer any questions, you know, within reasonable travel distance. I'll, you know, come help you. I'll do whatever needs to be done because I've committed basically the rest of my functional life is to helping people get out from underneath what I was living under and find a productive, happy life. And that's what I found. My wife has her husband back. My kids got their dad back. And my two little granddaughters have their grandpa back.
Oh, well, that's awesome. That is the best news ever.
Yeah, well, you guys keep advocating and let's keep working together and move the needle.
Amen. Let's do this.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have an awesome
Well, thank you very much for the thank you for the opportunity and hope to talk with you again.
You betcha.
Sure.
We'll have you on again
too.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, that was awesome.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. That was incredible. What a story. He went from assistant police chief to cannabis advocator. That's incredible. And he did what Lester Grinspoon did. He went and did his own research and studied and studied and studied. Before he did anything else, he researched and educated himself. And that's just what we hope that you guys all do out there. We can't even believe it's already this time.
I know.
Mickey Mouse Club.
Remember, tune in next Wednesday.
Yep. Who knows who's going to be on. Oh, my gosh. Is it going to be a whole new month? Glass break. Oh, my gosh. A new month. All right. Well, come on down this weekend to Tombstone and watch the Blood of Dust Gunfighters.
Yeah.
You know, there's wider to be down there.
Let those ladies and gentlemen tear them up.
Law don't go around here. All right, folks. Thanks for tuning in to Weekday Wednesday. Thank you, Bill. Thank you, Tumbleweeds Health Center. Thank you, Studio C. Thank you, Growers House. Thank you, everybody, for always being here. We love you. Thank you to all our bloggers, our callers. Thanks, Candace Kid.
Thank you, Sister.
Peace out. Have an awesome Weekday Wednesday, and we love you.
Remember,
be smart,
be safe, and educate.